You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we're more likely to reach peak farce than we are peak coronavirus cases. I'm your host, Justin M. Wisniewski, and we have survived, ladies and gentlemen, another week of quarantine, of this unending, unbearable quarantine. We've survived another week, and I think maybe we did it together, or maybe it's just I'm sitting in my apartment all day by myself, so I have to believe that we're in this together because I have no one else. So why don't you, to help me out, tell a friend about how you're surviving the quarantine, the lockdown, by listening to this podcast. Tell a friend, get more friends going so I can have more friends rather than my two cats. Also joining me this trip from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards.
To say that your cats are your friends is fairly presumptuous, I might add.
I don't know. Dude, I've seen some stuff where people are like, oh, man, all the dogs are happy. Their owners are home, but cats are upset. I have never had that experience with my cats. My cats want my attention all day. They bother me. They wake me up. They follow me around. They try and get me to do things with them. I don't know. I've never
had
the experience.
Is that a friend relationship or a master-servant relationship?
See, people say that, but it's not like they're not trying to get me to serve them. It's like, oh, hey, I want attention now, so let's go play. Like, it's the same thing dogs do.
To be clear, I'm not saying dogs are any better. My dog follows me around as if to say, hey, feed me and stuff. And he's not all that interested in being my friend.
Yeah, I would be fine with arguing that dogs are the same as cats in the negative sense. I just don't get where the experience is, oh, dogs are good and cats are bad. But maybe that's another podcast.
All animals are terrible. On a completely different note, and William, who hasn't been introduced yet, should feel free to chime in case this goes long. On your recommendation, I watched Onward on Friday, and I have, as of about 41 seconds ago, recovered from the emotional devastation that was wrought by Pixar's emotional torture porn that is their latest film. it was very good in the sense that the message was excellent. And it was executed well. But my God, man, they squeezed every emotional feeling out of me that possibly could be squeezed in a 90-minute movie or whatever it was. Yeah. Holy crap.
Yeah, it brought me to tears, too. I found the movie to be very emotional, but I think it's because it's making a very, very poignant point. And very briefly, you said, you know, you got the message. It was well done. What do you think the movie was about?
You mean that, like, the theme, like, the philosophic
the
theme?
Is coming out,
right,
isn't it?
I was like this before I started teaching. I want to see if he came to the same conclusion I did. Because on the surface level, it's about the relationship between two brothers. But I don't think that's the theme.
I think the theme is Disney needed a Frozen for boys.
I mean, I think that's fair.
No, just tell me what the theme is. Don't be Professor Justin. Just tell me what you think the theme is.
When I ask questions like that of someone like you, who I see as an equal, it's because I want to see if someone came to the same conclusion as me.
Now he's buttering you up before he proves you
I will tell you if I came to the same conclusion to you or not when you tell me, because I won't lie to you.
That's fair. That's fair. I don't feel like that's as good a pod, but okay. I'm not buttering anyone up. No, I think this is essentially a movie about a world that has a lack of masculinity and about the need for these boys to rediscover their masculinity.
Yeah, I don't think I would go that far with the theme because I don't think anyone who made it would have explicitly said that's the theme. I knew that's the direction you were going to go, but I couldn't say that that's what I thought the theme was because I didn't think that's what I thought the theme was. But I think that's in there, and I don't think it's like when you write something about males and you write something about fathers and you write something about adventure, there are unequivocally elements of masculinity that have to be in there, whether you want them to be in there or not. And I don't know if the writers wanted them to be in there per se, but they are there, and so you can enjoy them in that sense.
Okay, so the question I would ask you then is, what about the whole idea that the world is lacking magic? The magic is linked to the father, and they get stronger and better and healthier when they rediscover magic and it improves their life. You don't think magic is a metaphor for masculinity?
You know what's magic? My penis. And that's pretty masculine, so.
I mean, that is the ultimate magic wand. Not your penis in particular.
How Freudian do we have to go here?
Sucker punch Freudian.
It's penises all the way down.
See, that's I'm reluctant to say that that's a metaphor. Again, I think all the masculinity stuff is in there because of the subject matter and the characters. But I just think the theme is about wonder. The theme is about the part you're talking about is just not being lost. What's the word I'm looking for, Justin? There's a word. I don't think it's reify, but it's like what AOC said, right? Which is like our generation has never seen prosperity, where you're living in the middle of the great, most prosperous generation in history. It's where when we're born, everything we see around us is zero. And then only things that come after us count. But the idea, I think, at least for that part that you're talking about, I'm not going to go so far as to call it a theme, is that we can't start at zero, right? That there's all this wonder, all this magic that came before us that brought us to this point. That's a lot of talking.
Yeah. I think it's slightly off. I agree with what you're saying a lot, but magic in this sense isn't like the magic of the past. It's like a literal thing that people can use, and they learn spells and everything, and it makes their world better by using it. And the part of the world is that, when I say the world, I mean the world they live in, is that it's lacking that. So there's nothing exciting, there's nothing adventurous, there's nothing interesting about the world, because it's just all dehumanized. And it's dehumanized because the lack of the use of the magic. And to me, and maybe the argument can be made that they're doing it unintentionally, although I do think we're walking into territory of, oh, we can never prove that those are phallic symbols in Sucker Punch. Ah, well, you want me to get the video for you on this one, too? I think that whether intentional or not, the answer to what they're saying is missing from the world is masculinity, and they've presented that argument within their own movie.
Zack Snyder and Pixar writers and directors are very different people.
Oh, 100%.
What I'm going to say.
Oh, 100%.
If Zack Snyder had directed this movie, I would already be on board with your argument.
Yeah. Well, now we would have to do a deep dive on the writer and everything. But it's an interesting, let's leave it at this. It's an interesting open question. And at the very least, whether it's intentional or not, it's in there. And
okay. Yes.
You can enjoy it on that level. And
yes.
There's nothing within the movie that refutes it. Although I will say this. I think there's one small thing that they could have done if they wanted to really drive that home. And I think it's if the... what was the magical bear creature with the wings called?
The manticore?
The manticore. I think if the manticore had been a man and the mother had left the dopey beta cop for the manticore, it would have driven home the point a lot more if it was truly going to be about masculinity.
The only moment of levity in my entire viewing of this movie was at the end when she ended up with the beta cop, and my wife Faiza says, why the hell did they end up together? What does she see in him? And I said, well, he probably is hung like a horse. So
that's funny.
There's walkers and in also, the barn, and Lori's pregnant.
And also, again, with the magic and the rediscovering the masculinity, to me, he rediscovers his masculinity at the end when he can start running again and when he wants to run wild rather than just use the car.
I will say that the more I think about this and the more you talk, the less I'm actually convinced it's about masculinity, and the more that I'm convinced it's just about ability, being people of ability.
Yeah, I mean, that's true, too. That's in there. I just think the way it goes about it shows that it's a particular masculine ability. But yes, I agree that's in there.
Yeah. Hey, there's anyway, a third co-host.
Yeah, let's introduce William and move on with this show. From Dale's Lawn, identifying as a woman to forgo his gay white male privilege, so he probably hates the movie Onward and loves Frozen, William Green.
Hello, hello. So I noticed something today. This morning I had to go to Whole Foods and replenish my coffee supply.
Because you want old people to die?
Well, hold on. Yes, apparently, okay. Because I was the only one not wearing a cobbled together mask of some kind in the entire Whole Foods. So some might find that awkward or embarrassing, but I found it quite liberating. I was able to run through the store really quick and check out really fast, use my contactless Apple Pay, chat up the cute checker. Cashier and make my way in less than 30 minutes, which is amazing. I mean, LA traffic's light, the Whole Foods line was short, so I'm despite all the negative stuff going on with all this isolation, everything else, my only trip outside of the house in 2 weeks was completely successful.
It's not illegal to go out without a mask yet?
I don't know, because I've got work to do, and I don't know. If there's some sort of, flyer or, public posting, when I was constructing the store, I had to have all these, I had to take out an ad in the newspaper, I had to put a flyer up and stuff like that. So I'm waiting for the ad in the newspaper or some sort of sign, official sign.
You haven't heard the town crier? Hear ye.
I don't know. I don't know what
John
the rules
Cryer
are,
just but, goes around door to door to tell people they have to wear a mask.
He's got nothing else.
I can pull out my scarves from my Afghanistan deployment that I used for dust mitigation in my lungs. Maybe that will work if I need a makeshift mask.
Yeah, I feel like that would somehow be a microaggression.
Using a scarf?
Well, is not wearing a mask a microaggression?
Yeah, people like us, I don't think there's a way we could get away with it.
Wear a mask, don't wear a mask. Be a man, yeah. Don't be a man. It's all microaggression.
But no, I'm surprised California, Riverside County is requiring masks.
DC here has required masks, or I should say will require a mask as of this week, I think. And the county I'm in Maryland, is going to start requiring masks as of Wednesday. I don't know why they're waiting till Wednesday. Apparently, Monday and Tuesday, it's fine to not wear a mask.
Because they have to give people a chance to acquire masks. They can't just
be like,
oh,
you need a mask. Where are you supposed to acquire them? Aren't you in a catch-22 if you're supposed to have a mask and in order to be out and you have to go out to get a mask?
I wasn't defending them. I wasn't saying any of this made sense. I was just saying what the rationale is. With us, they told us on last Thursday... And the day this episode's being released here in this county, it's required to wear a mask.
At least for this time period, can we call it a catch 19?
A catch.
Yeah,
China.
So C-19. We're going to have a mask as of Wednesday to go out here. Although, again, the neighborhood I live in, the people just don't give a shit. They don't care. They don't care. Our stores, we have toilet paper in our stores, gentlemen.
The Whole Foods was pretty bare, but the Whole Foods has been pretty bare the whole time during this crisis. Like, the frozen food section is just empty. I think they've sort of gone into reduced customer mode, if that makes sense. It's not so much I don't think they have the supplies or the suppliers aren't delivering. I think they've just decided we're not going to carry things right now because, there's not as many customers. Vegetables they had was frozen peppers, like stir fry mix. That's the only thing they had. I was like, man, I want some broccoli.
All the Mexicans would buy that.
Well, there was plenty of it at Whole Foods.
I went to Sam's Club and Walmart last week, and they had stuff. They had bottled water. They had toilet paper. So I think the supply chain is back to normal, and people are... they're not hoarding as much. I mean, they weren't like perfectly stocked with these things, but they had enough for me and they had enough for a reasonable amount of people. So I think William's right. I think the supply chain is caught up. It's just, they're trying to, modulate it the proper way because people bought how many months out. So now they can't. They don't need to stock how many months out. So they have to balance it now because their customer base is different. All right. I mean, that's an interesting discussion, but I think we can have more interesting discussions, more discussions that are based around ideas than logistics and pragmatics. Although I do think logistics and pragmatics play into this. And quick side note, I do think the New York Times sudden shift to supporting Joe Biden and trying to sweep his sexual assault allegations under the carpet show the deep pragmatism that exists. The question I always have is, and Daniel, you know I've asked this, is there somebody leading all of this, or is it all just sort of organic and people are just sort of going with the flow? And I think that, by the New York Times, shows that it's more organic when people are just more pragmatic about everything. Because if it was strategic and they selected Joe Biden as the nominee, I think it would be a give up. And they're saying, okay, Trump can have it this time, so we can, in 4 years, have a knockout candidate that takes what we want. But the fact that they're actually trying to get behind Joe Biden shows that they just do whatever they think is pragmatically best at the time.
For people who are unaware, this is kind of a mini news section, but Joe Biden had a woman accuse him of sexual assault. I'm not even entirely sure because it's hard to find details.
It's all assault nowadays, Daniel.
Remember stair rape? Sexual inappropriateness. And the left, of course, responded by believing all women, and Biden has had to step down as the nominee, and we've moved up. Oh, no, that's not what happened at all, of course. She's a lying whore,
according
to the left.
Have a Kavanaugh-style pussy hat parade?
That's right. No. Oh. She's a lying harlot, according to the left. And the New York Times tweeted out today their in-depth investigation of her allegations. And then through a series of tweets, you get to one that I sent around to the group that's making its way around the internet because it is so patently absurd, that I'm paraphrasing, says something like, we found no sexual misconduct by Joe Biden other than inappropriate touching, inappropriate hugging, and kissing that may have made women uncomfortable in the past. So basically, case closed, he's innocent, let's move on, and hashtag don't believe this woman.
Right, and Alyssa Milano did the same thing, and if you remember, Alyssa Milano was like huge, like, all men are evil, believe all women, blah, blah, blah. And actually, it's so absurd that she changed in this pragmatic way that Rose McGowan, say what you will about how crazy she is, apparently she at least has integrity, called out Alyssa Milano about it. So those two worked on a show for years together, and now they're fighting over this. So
to be 100% clear about this, the fact that the New York Times, in fact, found, quote, hugs, kisses, and touching that women previously said made them uncomfortable, unquote, is already infinitely more evidence than they found against Brett Kavanaugh.
Right.
Just keep that in mind.
Right.
Now, I happen to believe that both of these women's allegations, Kavanaugh's and Blasey Ford's, are the same level of arbitrary. But...
well,
the New York Times and the left is not acting principled in this case, so it's
quite interesting
to see unfold.
I don't want to just say the left. I don't know if anyone's acting principled at this point. But at the same time, it's not even the Kavanaugh thing. Wasn't there the story about the lady who was like, Trump hugged me? Remember that lady?
No, I don't remember.
Yeah, and there was the video evidence that he didn't hug her or whatever.
Justin, so much was said about Trump. That is both true, untrue, somewhat true. I can't even keep track anymore. I just assume he's the worst person
ever.
I assume he's the worst person ever to hold the office, and that he should be impeached for many reasons, but that it's never going to happen, and he's going to win re-election because of creepy Uncle Joe.
Scott Adams has been saying that they're going to pull a McGovern style something. Someone is going to take Biden out to the woodshed is his prediction. And
maybe
the nominee is going to be someone else because, first of all, you got the New York mayor and governor look real good right now, right? Real good in quotes, right? They're getting in the news. I'm just saying they're both are getting in the news. They're both having lots of press. press coverage, all that stuff, right? It would make better sense, like you were saying, Justin, on a strategy level, is to pick one of those. Someone who's like not got dementia and alive and below 80 years old. Like all those things make sense, right?
Right. But you only pick Biden.
I'm just saying Scott Adams, that's what he argues.
Scott Adams is interesting. He says a lot of stuff that I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. But then he says other stuff that's just insane. So
I don't know, that joke that you both sort of wrote together, which is the next to Trump, Cuomo's looking pretty good. Hashtag no Cuomo. that's a pretty good joke. Andrew Cuomo, I don't know about the mayor of New York. De Blasio may look fine in this, and then the moment he opens his mouth, people are like, oh, he's more socialist than Bernie Sanders.
Sort of like Rudy Giuliani in 9/11.
A lot like that, actually.
Where he seemed good, and then afterwards he started talking, you're like, wait, can we just remember he was the 9/11 hero guy?
But Cuomo, especially in comparison to Trump, looks like some heroic figure out of a novel, which is sad because he's also fairly terrible. But if the D's were smart, they would they'd lead Uncle Joe over to the side room and put him down and say, oh, too bad, Joe Biden stepped out of the race. Now we'll have to get someone else who's not Bernie Sanders. Anyway, that's way too much politics for anyone to care about.
Biden didn't kill himself.
Start it now.
Yeah, that'll be, if he does die and Hillary is nominated, it would be hilariously ironic, right? Like we have, once again, the Clintons and a suspicious death. It would be deliciously ironic.
All right, let's move on. Let's go to the Life on the Midside segment and let's talk some more about California. Okay, hit the music, William. Take a good look around. This life really sucks. Are we just complaining? I hope that this mic is on. Because I'm on a roll here. I hope that you're making some sense. I hope that you'll throw up your hands and sing it and tell all the haters that they should just shut up and smile. Yeah. Oh, sorry. I got distracted reading the Discord because we got some good content going on in there. Wow, I transitioned my actual distraction into a good plug. That's awesome. We've got some great content in there during the week. We've got some articles that are really keeping us informed as to what's going on in the positive way. You know, if you're trying to avoid getting stuck in the doom and gloom of this news cycle, joining into the Discord and seeing the news that's posted, like someone posted an article, a Midsider posted an article about how Texas is trying to open up again, and then other states are sort of following suit, and there's the idea of, is Texas leading the way? Which, in the other way, you know, California led the way. And before we talk about that, just real quick, you can join the Discord by going to midside.com or midside.com/podcast, clicking on any episode link, and there's a link to join the Discord in there. So when we're talking about California leading the way, Texas leading the way, California is leading the way in a very interesting category. And the discussion around it, to me, sort of encapsulates the discussion around this whole pandemic. And what I'm referring to, and William, since you're still there, and I was there around the time when this was going on, people are starting to wonder if people already had this in late November through January, if this was around longer than people realize, earlier than people realize. And part of the reason they're saying that, beyond the anecdotal evidence of people saying they had it and or had symptoms like it, I mean, I can speak to Christine having fatigue, having trouble breathing, and I had like 3 days in a row where I had to take NyQuil to knock something out at the same time she was sick, and then everyone in my office was sick with something similar.
And there are other people who have it, right?
Yes, I understand. It's medicine. Okay.
Oh, man. That's what I call my bourbon, medicine.
Not going to go into that discussion, okay?
Just joking with you. I'm just trying to derail you.
I know. Well, it worked. And the question is, and studies are starting to be done with antibody tests and everything, about was this around? Because California has such, like, when you look at the number of people versus somewhere like New York or even Florida, there's so many fewer cases than you would expect and fewer deaths than you expect. And they only started all the lockdown, the stay at home, a couple of weeks or a couple of days before everyone else. So that's possibly the explanation, that there's some sort of herd immunity there. And I mean, I've certainly been out. I mean, I was out at Epcot in the middle, you know, March 14th. I was out at Epcot when this was going, and I didn't get sick. You know, I've been out in public. I've been driving around delivering food. I've come in contact with a lot of people, so it's strange I haven't gotten sick. Now, granted, there's only 300 cases in my county out of 780,000 people. No, sorry, 78,000 people. I added 100,000 there.
Wow.
78,000 people. So
those
the
old
odds
people
of becoming...
sure get multiplied.
There's not as many old people where I am. But what I've noticed is people heavily politicizing this. And what I mean by it is, in particular, there was an article in Slate where they were basically saying they're not studying the antibodies in California to see if anyone had it or not. They're studying it for another reason, and that anyone who thinks it is part of like a right-wing conspiracy theory to discredit all the lockdowns and everything. But my problem with this has been from the beginning that we're rushing into this without enough information, and both sides are digging in as if they have all the ultimate truth of the situation, and nobody's looking at the reality of the situation. So my first question is, what do you guys think of the herd immunity theory in California? Do you think that's possible, or do you think that anyone who believes it or thinks it's possible is just buying into right-wing propaganda?
Yeah, I think it's important here that the point that you're making is what should have been a scientific question became a political, like, maneuver, right?
Yes.
Like, it was being used as a political wedge. Because I think I've only found like one non-politicized discussion of this on Twitter, which the fact that I found one was amazing, but that's thanks to Jason Crawford. I'll post a link to it so that we can have it. And this guy actually says, okay, he thinks that the first cases of COVID-19 came in January, February, and he's got this great analysis and an argument for why he doesn't think that it came earlier, before January. All right. And he's fairly certain on it. He's got a nice long thread showing graphs and charts and analysis and everything else. It's great. It's a great way to digest this. Now, that doesn't mean the hypothesis is bad, right? Like something did either work here or some other factor is in play in California, because things should be much worse considering how late we started lockdown procedures, right? Like that you would have expected more. Now maybe more will happen. Maybe it's just an extra delay or something, right? Like California is a much bigger state than people realize. The population density is very high in LA and Orange County, but it's very low in other places, right? Like so, and it's definitely lower than New York City. So there's lots of other factors here. But even the fact that people are asking is somehow being politicized, right? Like the hypothesis, asking the question, is being politicized. And that's really scary, right? Like everything is political in this, you know, neo-Marxist world, right? Everything is a political idea. Everything is a way to bash your political opponents. And it's really, really strange. Just happening here, Justin. I want to give Daniel a chance and give you a chance to respond, but don't think it's happening here, just here, right? China is banning research into the origins of the Wuhan flu, as we're not allowed to say, in China. They've banned academic research into the source of coronavirus.
Yeah, and that's scary. Yeah, no, 100%. And that's scary because of that, how political that move is. But for the U.S., I mean, that's communism, right? That's a whole other level of scary. But for the U.S., and this is how I'll pivot to Daniel, and I'll throw this transition to Daniel. For the U.S., it's scary to me because what it's doing is invalidating the experiences of real people who aren't politicizing it. And when I say that, I talk about Christine, who's now working two jobs, and she legitimately says to me, I had these symptoms. How do I know I didn't have it already? Especially because I look around and no one around me is really sick. And no one in my family has it. No one I know has it. And I live in California where it's supposed to be bad. So it not only politicizes it, but by politicizing it, they're delegitimizing people who have experiences and are asking legitimate questions and want legitimate answers. If it's supposed to be government for the people, by the people, that's not happening anymore, right, Daniel?
Oh, boy. You took that in a very Thomas Jefferson direction. I'll say this. We don't... The amount we know about this is so incredibly low, and the amount we will learn about it is not going to happen very quickly. So we're making lots of huge decisions based on very little information, when we should be doing much less of that in general. But the problem is that the government at all levels, county now here, also state and then federal, all view this as a political question first and foremost, not a scientific question, not a moral question, not an economic question, not even a healthcare question, but a political question, which is what is expedient for us to do. So the county commissioners, the state reps, the governors, the president, they all have their own constituents. And so they're trying to do things that are in line with their constituency. So if you're if you have a D behind your name, you're trying to be extra tough and lock them up, which is funny, since they were leading the criminal justice reform movement before this. But now
also
we need to lock everyone in their homes.
Everyone on the right was saying lock them up to Hillary, right? Lock her up.
Right, exactly. And if you're on the right side, you need to do things that are more, open up the economy. This isn't so bad. And, libertarians are somewhere in the middle there. But the point is, I don't think we should expect anything better of our politicians, certainly. I don't think they've ever demonstrated that they're better than this. And in fact, we should assume that in these scenarios, they are going to be terrible. And why is that, Justin? Because we, the royal we, as a culture, are just as terrible.
Well, and that's the point I'm trying to make.
We want to put things in boxes. We want other people. We want to create in-groups and out-groups for the sake of moral judgment. And so we get politicians that do that. That should not be surprising. And I'm sure it's not surprising to you, but it shouldn't be surprising that when our politicians do this, it's because we do it.
Right. No, I agree with everything you're saying. And that's the point I'm making when I'm talking about using the example of someone like Christine, who's pretty apolitical and is asking questions about a legitimate experience she's having. She legitimately was sick in that way. No one around her is getting sick. She's experiencing these things. She was at Epcot with me. She flew across the country and she still didn't get sick. There's a very specious way you could think she has immunity to this. And that's why I'm not just talking about, and your point's very well taken, I'm not really talking about the politicians. That's what I expect from the politicians. But I'm talking about the rest of us. I'm talking about the rest of us where we have an opportunity here to say, this is hurting our lives in multiple ways, so we can have an honest conversation about it. But instead, we're more wanting to be in our in-groups and our out-groups, because for some reason we feel safer in that way. We feel safer saying we believe we belong to a group and that group's going to protect us than we do figuring out reality and being able to protect ourselves by understanding reality. And that's what really bothers me.
Right. And it's partially because that way I can turn my brain off for a lot of the time. I don't have to have the burden of knowing the world. I don't have to have the burden of acting based on my own evaluation of what is true and false. I can rely on other people. And the more other people I can rely on, the greater chance that they'll be quote unquote right. And so people who are second-handed, people who are, I think Ayn Rand used an awesome term called social metaphysicians, i.e. the people who let others determine what is real, it is so ingrained in them to do this that anything that threatens that herd mentality instead of herd immunity,
well, they think it's
an existential threat.
Okay,
yeah,
you finish. But I was going to interrupt. Yes. I was going to say it's ironic because they think they have a herd immunity that way. It's social herd immunity they think they have.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Episode
and
title.
It's insidious. And it's insidious because you see other people who have that spark where they want to think independently, they start to think independently, they immediately get shut down because instead of being presented and treated as someone who has reason and being reasoned with, they're immediately treated to ad hominem and straw manning, right? Like right off the bat, right? Like if you ask this question, like, hey, is it possible the lower deaths and lower impact in California is due to us getting the virus earlier and not really realizing it? Instead of, oh no, you're just right-wing conspiracy nut. It's like, what? Right? Like, where's the assumption of another thinking being on the other side of that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, I will say that it goes back to the interpersonal hostility thing we talked about way back on the edition about the Orlando shooting. Remember, that's where we really talked about that? It's the assumption that other people are terrible and you know better than them. And it's ironic that this is happening in California, which is the state most known for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I will say that the herd immunity theory is an interesting one and one where I think the jury is still out even on being able to test the hypothesis because we have so little information. I would say that Occam's razor here, Justin, in terms of sickness is simply that, you know, why we don't know, why Christine doesn't know anyone at work or whatever who's sick, and why I know very few people who are sick across the country, is that something like 0.05% of the U.S. population has it. So it's going to be a small number anyway.
Oh, yeah, certainly. And I've had that discussion with her. We've had discussions about it in that way. I was just talking about in the general culture. I agree with your assessment completely. I'm not saying it's true about California or not. I don't know. Although we do know there is a Midsider who his mother-in-law had it, and then he had the symptoms, so it's likely he had it because he had the symptoms, his wife had the symptoms, two of his kids had the symptoms. They're all good now. They don't have the symptoms anymore. So we do know somebody, but and they were all very mild, but that's the closest it's come to being personal for me.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed. I mean, I've had a few internet acquaintances who have reported that they've had it, all of whom have recovered and none of whom have had a serious case of it. There's someone I knew through, not even knew, someone I know of through work who is fairly prominent in our community who was put on a ventilator.
But a lot of the people who are prominent in your community are ancient.
This guy happens to be 41 and in fantastic marathon running shape, but he does have asthma. Although he has run marathons, so.
Well, but one of the things I've read is that the O2 saturation levels are really what tells whether you're going to be able to have mild or not. That if your O2 starts dropping, that's how you know you're in trouble. And with someone with asthma. But then that's the other part of this discussion where scientifically we don't know. Where now I'm reading there are different strains because there are slight mutations. There's the Washington strain, the New York strain, the China strain. That's how they're tracing it back. So how do you know certain strains aren't worse to get than others?
Yeah. And he survived, by the way. He's now discharged from the hospital.
Those all sound like bad horror movies. The China strain, the New York strain, the Washington strain. It sounds like increasingly like derivative sequels.
Well, that goes back to Midsider Conrad's discussion, the question from last edition, where there actually was a television show called The Strain, where there was an outbreak in New York City, and they did bring in an epidemiologist to deal with all of it. Now, it was sort of like a hybrid between a zombie and a vampire, but it had that sort of it dealt with a lot of these things where they tried to lock down New York City and stuff.
Interestingly, this virus does that too. But it makes you a collectivist zombie and vampire. So,
well, that's collectivist zombie is redundant, right?
Yes.
All right. So that's just something I've been thinking about a lot. Just this idea of like everything has to be political. And that's part of what like bothers me about this, because a lot of the models now have been reduced, right? The amount of cases, the amount of resources, the amount of deaths have all been reduced, as well as the expected peak dates have been reduced. Where, I mean, we're past some of the expected peak dates now, and there's no conversation about even what was honestly said on the record, William. Aren't they out there and they're denying that it was ever said 2.1 million people or 2.2 were going to die? And then remember how I upset one of the midsiders because I said, well, if it even gets to a million, I don't even know if I'll admit I was wrong. And I was saying that to be, I was being conservative with my estimates there because I thought it was going to be under a million. And they're even denying that that stuff was ever said on record and people believed it, aren't they?
Yeah, it's unfortunate that that we're there's two things here. There's this unrealistic standard of some people looking at people changing their mind and updating with new data and sort of saying, well, they've been mistaken all along, they have terrible judgment, right? There's this one standard. And then there's this other one where we're supposed to completely forget what people have said. And not hold those people accountable. Do you understand what I'm saying? There's like this, like typical things on our show. It's the midside here, right? Like you have to hold people accountable for what they said. And you have to also respect the context, right? All the criticism I see of Trump, is, he said X and Y and, you know, back then he said this and that. And you look at the one thing he's done right is he's had the experts standing behind him, right? And he's been listening and changing his mind on what actions to take and stuff like that. Whether you agree with him or disagree with him, the methodology is sound here, right? He's acting like a CEO, right? He's taking in new data and changing his strategy on the fly. Now, he's not changing it arbitrarily, right? He's not just he is being politically expedient. I don't want to undercut what you were saying before. That is true. And he's not perfect, and I don't support Trump. I have to always say that, right? Because people, the same.
You say one good thing about him, and they think you're a Trump supporter.
Yeah, exactly. Apparently, you worship him. But this is something you want to see in a leader, right? And it's the same thing you want to have among your thought leaders, right? If there's people you're following and they were wrong, how they were wrong matters, right? It really matters. If they were wrong because they were hysterical and they overpredicted this. And now they're refusing to talk about how do we get out of it, how do we recover the economy? You need to cut them out, right? Like they're not gonna give you sound ideas, right? Same thing on the other side. If they were saying this is just a flu, bro, and continued with that, it's just the flu, bro, attitude. You need to cut them out too, right? It's the methodology that matters.
Right, and in the sense of Trump, something else people are missing when you're talking about context, William. They'll really rail him for in the beginning where he was like, oh, we have this contained. There's nothing to worry about. Forgetting that part of being a CEO is PR. And he's not going to come out and in the beginning be like, oh, yeah, this is terrible.
World is
we
over.
All need to be afraid.
We're all
going to
die. Imagine if he was saying, imagine taking what some of the hysterical people were saying at the time and having the president say that.
Yeah. You'd think we'd run out of toilet paper. Yeah.
We would have needed the National Guard for sure.
Daniel. That's part of my thing, because it shouldn't have to be said that Trump or, here we go, any politician is neither a hero nor this Ayn Rand-esque villain in real life. They are
hero or
mixtures.
Hitler. Gotta put Hitler.
They are not, hero or Hitler. They are neither hero nor Hitler in real life. They do things that are bad. They do things that are good.
Maybe they're not some Jesus or devil character. Maybe they're just a guy trying to do the right thing. Sorry, had to.
I wouldn't even go that far with Trump, but your point is well taken. But the thing is, what politician do we expect who would have acted all that differently? I mean, Trump is different in the sense that he's obnoxious and probably dumber than most politicians, but he's at least just followed advice from people. What person would have acted differently in this scenario? And that's the thing. I'm not going to vote for Trump. I'm not going to vote for Biden because I'm not going to vote. But I also don't have this overwhelming urge to pile on and call him the next Hitler.
Wait, can we pause for a second?
Yeah.
Did you just come over to my side? The non-voting side?
Not just now, Justin. That's been a while.
Oh, I remember the last election. I was like, I'm not voting. And I was like, nobody vote. And people thought I was crazy.
My God, you have dementia. Dementia. I've talked about agreeing with you and not voting for 7 months, 8 months, 9 months, a year.
No, I just have
it's funny that Justin has the podcast amnesia and Daniel, you never listen to the podcast. So
yeah.
Yeah.
No, I just have a persecution complex. So I just assume no one ever agrees with me.
Persecution.
I just like to point out
complex,
when people agree to
Napoleon
me.
Complex.
Man, you've got a complex complex.
Yeah.
Dude, it's in a complex.
All right, continue your point, Daniel. Are you done?
Can I finish? Can I finish?
Okay, chop and broccoli.
No, I'm done. Trump's, as to summarize, neither hero nor Hitler. Good, bad. Good Kanye, bad Kanye.
I mean, it goes back to what you were saying before, Daniel, about the whole, you know, wanting to just belong to a group because you can offload your thinking. And we had a midsider in the Discord say something that connected the 2 points wonderfully. People in the 21st century don't want leaders changing their minds. They want leaders reflecting their own views right back at them, just like their media of choice does. It's the same thing. It's the same discussion. It's the same point.
That's fantastic. Yes.
Yeah. All right, so I think that sums up everything that's sort of going on intellectually, and that's sort of the place I'm at with this whole thing. I am personally, the thing I have the most trouble with, and what I'm personally annoyed at, is if we're supposedly getting to the peak, why do they keep extending the lockdowns and the closures and putting more restrictions on us? That's where I'm personally at. But I know you guys are at a different place personally, and Daniel, something you wanted to talk about was... what are the benefits, the unseen benefits? Go ahead.
Right. And it's an open question. I have some thoughts about it, but, you know, any action, almost any action you take, unless it ends up just killing you, is going to have some positives and it's going to have some negatives. And don't get me wrong, I think the negatives of the lockdown that we're doing far, far outweigh the positives. But I think just by the nature of it being a thing, it will also have positives to it that are notable. So one thing that's been going around the internet, which I think is an interesting positive of the lockdown, is that overall mortality, overall deaths in the United States are way down, way down. So while we've seen increased deaths from coronavirus, total deaths are down, and the lockdown may have saved more people than died, and that does nothing for the people whose families have died of coronavirus, I understand. But if we're just looking at general mortality, that's way down. So first and foremost, any thoughts about that? And to add one more asterisk to it before you answer, again, not saying this justifies the lockdown, just saying we should try to find some silver linings out of this horrible situation.
Yeah, and in that case, the silver lining I would hope would be what we were just saying. People can look at it and assess their own behavior and say, well, fewer people are dying. Why is that? What can I personally do to contribute to when we go back out into the world, if we go back out into the world at this point, and live normal life, whatever normal life is going to look like after that, after this? What can I do to continue to contribute that so that doesn't go back up? Was I driving recklessly? What was the most dangerous thing I did every day? Was I living in an unhygienic way? Was I living in an unhygienic way? That sort of stuff. I agree with that, what you're saying, Daniel. What about you, William? Is there anything like that for you that you see that Daniel's talking about?
Yeah, I think one thing that kind of popped into my head when you're mentioning the, the all-cause mortality has gone down during this time. Part of that just could be short-term, right? Because we know it's going to have an impact. Like the it's always the unseen that is the hardest to quantify, right? And in this case, how many countries are going to delay coming out of poverty because of this, right? Because of this overall economic slowdown, and how many lives are affected there. So while it might be, it is a silver lining, it could be just a short-term game, and only in particular countries. I think
sure.
Switching to answer the question, though, what positive aspects do that affect me? You know, I've been taking up a lot more projects here, things that were on my list to do, but I could never really find the time to do. Now I've got nothing but time, right? And, you know, I've been working on some coding projects and spending a lot more quality time online with particular individuals. You know, I've been engaging with Twitter. I almost am never on Twitter, as most of you guys who follow me know. You get random retweets and show prep. That's about all you get on my Twitter. But interacting with people directly, with people I don't normally get to see, or for lockdown reasons I can't see right now. And if in some ways it's been revealing to see who reaches out to me and who responds when I reach out to them, and really figuring out who those quality people are in my life. And I think that's a tremendous value too. You know, you can pull that out of a crisis as well and see who are the people who really value you, right? When the chips are down. And there's a, you know, an emotional satisfaction when you see like, oh yeah, we still have a connection despite all these hardships that we're facing.
Yeah, it's a good point. I've tried to reach out to people who have, you know, I haven't made time to reach out to. And I think, Justin, to tie this to something you were talking about to start the segment, is this might be an interesting opportunity to learn of values that we weren't acting on that we should be acting on even after lockdown lifts. So it's a value that I've been in contact more with people who I've fallen out of contact with. I don't want that to discontinue after I'm back in the daily hustle of being quote unquote busy.
Yeah, you actually talk to me on the phone sometimes now.
Well, and
still barely.
And I think the hygiene point is also in your personal life, right? Like, we were, you know, getting those people out in the open, understanding that certain people are these sort of panic thinkers and maybe don't have the most healthy relationship with reality. Like, those things are starting to come out now, right? Like, you're starting to see people, you know, act irrationally, and this is new information that you can use to judge their character, right? And judge how close or how far you have to get them in your life.
Since you opened the door to that, something I would love, and it's something I've talked about on this show before, and I beat this drum all the time, is the fucking body positive movement, okay? We are seeing that people are trying to claim obesity is not a pre-existing condition. But if you have trouble with that, with weight, and you see that that's hurting people and it makes them not as healthy, you can at least self-assess now and see that that is not healthy. And I think that's part of what we're seeing here. It creates the opportunity for self-improvement.
That's something I didn't want to mention because it's a little personal, but I've been using this time to work out more because I can't go to the climbing gym. And obviously I'm eating much healthier because I'm cooking everything myself. I'm not eating at work, which sometimes there's not very healthy choices. They're delicious choices at work, but not always the most healthy choices at work. I'm down to 185 pounds. This is the lightest I've weighed since my car accident, since a few months after my car accident. So,
well, congratulations.
Yeah,
fantastic.
So that's another positive thing coming out of the Wuhan virus.
I have the opposite problem though, because I'm just all day not doing anything, and I can't go to the gym. I have my workouts and stuff that I'm doing, certainly, and I'm stronger in certain ways, and I feel fine. But I'm somebody who, when I get bored, I want to eat, and I want to eat junk food. So it's really hard for me to not be like, okay, I'm going to go to the store now and buy some candy. So I'm having the opposite problem food wise.
Yeah. I mean,
well,
that's,
I had a hankering for ice cream. And so last weekend or two weeks ago, I walked the dog all the way down to Coldstone, which is like 3/4 of a mile away, had ice cream and walked the dog all the way back. So I feel like
your Coldstones are still open?
They were a week and a half ago. It was takeout only, right? Like, you go in and order and take it out.
Yeah, but all the ice cream places here are closed because those are like, it creates more interaction with the customer in that way.
I can order Coldstone on DoorDash. It's still available. middle of Bangladesh right now.
Wow.
No, I don't know why you would,
love that phrase. It's a very 2020 phrase.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Now, Wendy's sucked me in where I went there and I got like a medium drink. And then on the cup, it had one of those, like, you know, McDonald's did the Monopoly game. Well, I had one of those pieces that I ripped it off. It was like free Frosty with a purchase.
I prefer with a purpose, yeah, actually. Yeah.
I'd like it with a purpose as well. It's like, here's a Frosty and here's your life's purpose. Wow, this is great. Here's a Frosty. Here's what you have to do for the week. Wow, this is awesome.
As long as it's not with a porpoise, yeah, then I'm on board.
With a purchase. So I was like, oh man, I got to go back to Wendy's now. Get my free purchase, Frosty, right? And so I got another thing, and I got another medium drink, and then I ripped it off, and it said free Frosty with a purchase. And I was like, they do this every time. Damn them.
Because the Frosty cost them a quarter of a penny.
Correct.
Or something.
Correct.
Last thing I'll say in terms of benefits for me personally is something that has been incredibly invaluable, which is, so when I'm working normally, I'm commuting at least an hour there and an hour back every day, and there's no real opportunity for me to come home. And so now that I'm working from home, I do segregate myself during the day from the family, but that's in the basement.
Racist.
And so I don't have to do that hour of commuting and not coming home. So I get to go quote unquote home for lunch, i.e. upstairs. And I'm getting on average an extra 3 hours a day to spend with my son, which is, you know, over 8 days, an extra entire day of getting to spend with my son in this incredible phase of his life. He's 21 months. He'll be two in July. And I don't know what that's worth, but it's been incredible. And I'm not sure what I could do in my life rationally to have had that value. It had to sort of be, quote unquote, imposed upon me. I guess I could go back to consulting and work from home. But in terms of balancing reward from work versus that, you know, there's a lot of questions. So I don't know. I clearly, this has been a horrible time for many people, especially people who have lost their job. But that particular thing has been, you know, to use a word, a blessing of sorts out of this very terrible time.
And that's phenomenal. Like, it's amazing to hear that. And it's great to hear that, because I have the inverse problem, Daniel, where, yeah, I just moved across the country. I live, mm-hmm, by myself. I have one friend out here who lives across the county in Orange County, a different county, right across the city. And every day I was going to school and I was working with the students, and then I was going to wrestling practice and I was starting to go to the gym. So I was contributing to a community and I was part of something. Whereas now I'm disconnected from everything. I'm not able to work my way into the community. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean, that's what I was doing. I was proving my value to people. I was getting a rhythm. I was ingratiating myself. It was working. And now, especially with this distance learning, I'm just a facilitator. I might as well be any random person doing it. It doesn't matter that it's me. I'm not part of any community. I'm just here on my own collecting a paycheck. You know, I guess I'm collecting it in Florida, not California. But I guess the positive about that is I'm not being influenced by all the negative energy of a lot of people that usually exists. I mean, one of the reasons I wanted to get away from California is that idea of interpersonal hostility, all that negative energy all the time. And now I'm just completely disconnected from it. So now when I go back into the world eventually, I can decide, as you were just saying, how much do I want to let people in or not? How much do I want to let that influence in or not, and in what ways?
Yeah, absolutely.
William?
I don't really have anything to add. I think I've said everything I can say.
All right. Sounds good. So no one's got anything else to say, so we're going to end this trip. We're going to put a bow on it, and we're going to say, what did we learn this trip? William?
Well, I learned that I'm the only one in all of L.A. that doesn't have a mask. But I shouldn't feel guilty about it.
Daniel?
I learned that ice cream is essential. That's what I learned. Justin, what did you learn?
I learned that masculinity is so important that even if artists and filmmakers aren't trying to argue for it, they have to because they need it so badly.
Fair enough. We hope you, the loyal listeners, learned something this week. But don't tell us on social media, because we don't care about that right now. Instead, tell a friend if you learned something. Get them involved with the show. Now's the time to reach out and touch someone with a virtual stick.
And in real life, too. That's one of the things I didn't say, Daniel. I haven't touched another human being in so long.
Well, there is that, and that's awkward to end on.
Well, I have cats. I touch my cats.
Well, that's one type of... Never mind. Yeah, so go to themidside.com/podcast to listen to previous episodes, themidside.com/store for all your Midside merch. If you got nothing else to do, why don't you leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and Google Play? Helps us move up the ranks there. And you can subscribe to liberty.me's feed, which distributes us. Thank you for that. Wherever podcasts are sold, quote unquote. And patreon.com/themidside, where you can go to give us a couple bucks every time we produce one of these bad boys. It helps us keep the lights on. And we need those lights now that we're in the house all the time. The lights are rather important at this stage in our lives. And once again, tell a friend, tell a friend, tell a friend. And until next time, we love you.
This concludes your journey into the Midside. I'm Justin M. Lesneski, reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a mask-free day. You know what's on ESPN2 right now?
Is it the NBA horse thing?
Nope. League of Legends. We're taking
over,
Justin. We're taking over.
I mean, that's going to be a positive for you, William, if now that becomes more of a sport because it's distance, so we can engage in it more. That's going to be a big win for you in your career.
Yeah, I'm hoping so.
You were going to say a competitive bicycle tossing or something. Don't end on that. That was a horrible joke.